recap of last time. We're talking about the mitzvah of ma'aser, and more generally, the mitzvah of tzedakah. Tzedakah is a mitzvah midoraisa to give to the needy. Ma'aser is a specific amount, 10%. We also brought other amounts. In fact, we bought three amounts. The three amounts that we brought are a third of a shekel, 10%, and 20%. And we came out saying that it works basically like tax brackets when somebody's being taxed. As follows, the Rama Paskins, 20% is a maximum that one is permitted to give unless it falls within the specific exceptions that permits one to exceed 20%. But 20% would be the ideal mitzvah. 10%, midah beinonis, the average thing to do, less than 10%, less than ma'aser, is stingy, ayin ra. Going less than a third of a shekel, approximately $2 today, is somebody who will not even fulfill the mitzvah midah oraisa of tzedakah. The Shulchan Aruch paskins at 20% is not a cap. That's the Ramah's view, is that it's a cap. The view of the Shulchan Aruch, it's not a cap if you can afford to exceed. Indeed, there's a mitzvah to exceed 20%. What we're going to focus on today is the mechanics of computing. We've said 20%, 20%, 10%, 20% of what? 10% of what? 20% of what? How does that work? So we're going to focus more today on deductions from income. In other words, there's income, there's revenues. I earn a lot of money, hopefully, during a given year, and I can deduct certain things similar to taxes in order to achieve my net income, just like taxes. My net that I pay tax on, the same thing with maaser or chomesh. I achieve my net income in order to apply 10% or 20%. So real quickly, we're not going to go in detail on what's included in revenue. We're going to talk more about deductions. But on a high level, income includes, brace yourselves, I have a list of 28 things in front of me. You will be receiving this towards the end of this year. I'm not going to read them all. Wages and salaries. Wages is probably the biggest thing. Tips and bonuses, commissions, interest received, dividends, monetary gifts, non-monetary gifts received and sold. So that shas that you receive for your marriage, and it has 20 volumes, you do not have to give two of them to tzedakah as a ma'aser. But if you sell that shas, because you got two of them, you would then, when being paid for it, you would give ma'aser or chomesh on that. Awards and prizes, refunds of income taxes paid, scholarships and fellowships received from a kollel. Ask a shaila if you have. Somebody's receiving designated funds to stay in yeshiva. Do you have to give ma'aser or not? It's an important question. Value of food stamps received. Oftentimes when somebody's receiving food stamps, they can't afford to give ma'aser. And last time we talked about those people who are below a certain level of livelihood don't have to give. Net income from the sale of stocks. If a stock appreciates but you didn't sell it, similar to taxes, you bought Apple, you got a 400% return, you never sold it, you don't have to pay ma'aser, you don't have to pay taxes or ma'aser until you sell that stock. It's called the realization event. When you realize a gain, then you pay tax, you pay ma'aser. If you didn't realize the gain, you do not have to pay tax and you do not have to pay ma'aser. So all of these plus are included in gross revenue. An important point, the Yerushalmi tells us that if we're giving chomesh, the same would be if we're giving ma'aser, 20% or 10% each year, then after 5 years approximately, although it's 20% less, you don't wind up with zero. But assuming it's 20% and you wind up at zero after 5 years, how is that possible? You get 20% a year, we wind up with nothing at the end of the day. So the Yerushalmi, and this is how we paskin in Shulchan Aruch, the first year that you earn money, you pay 20% or 10% from the principal amount. The year after, the money that you've already paid ma'aser on, similar to taxes, we don't have to pay taxes again the next year on money that we've already paid taxes on, we just pay on the increase. So in other words, just to put some numbers on that, if I receive $100, I pay ma'aser on it, I gave 10%, I'm left with $90. Thank you, Teddy. I'm left with $90. The next year, I do not have to give 10% of that $90, another $9, but that $90 I put into a CD and I'm earning interest on it. And let's say I earn $10 of interest, I'm back up to 100, I would give 10% of the increase in the value. So I would give 10% of the increase, which is 10% of $10, I would give $1 to tzedakah. So that's an important fundamental of what we're talking about as to the computation. How often do I compute it? So the poskim discuss, is it once a year? Some poskim say once a year, by parallel to meister that I take from my fields. The pasuk says, Hayotze asada shana shana, each and every year I tithe my field, so too. That is one of the sources, just that we learn from the Avos, Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov, that we give meister. We also learn from the tithing of a field. When it comes to the tithing of a field, it says it's done on an annual basis, so too I would give my annual tithe of financial assets on an annual basis. Some poskim say that. Some poskim say, very nice, do it from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, because it's Rosh Hashanah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is deciding how we will do financially. So compute it based on that time period. Now, very important point, we're not waiting until we do the computation to give it all. That's not how we do it, at least in the United States. Lahavdil on the taxes, but we pay in along the way, right? You have estimated taxes every quarter, at least if you're self-employed. If you're not self-employed, you're a salaried employee, you don't even see the taxes. It gets withheld at the source. It gets withheld by the company that's paying you. So same thing with tzedakah. We pay along the way based on an estimate, and then come the end of our payment period, our computation period, we're going to do a final computation and make good. If we underpaid, we have to make good on it. If we overpaid, maybe you can get it back. Okay, so annual basis is possible. Poskim give other lengths of period to compute it over. Some say 6 months. Some say 3 months you compute it over. I have a daughter who started a business. She's 14 years old. Small business. She computes it monthly. She's very machmir on this. Comes the end of the month, she keeps everything on Excel. Comes the end of the month, she computes the earnings, and she takes out meiser from it every single month. So she doesn't wait the year. She's computing and closing the books every single month and giving meiser based on that. Okay, so the majority of this year, what we're going to talk about is three areas can we deduct off of gross revenue. We went through gross revenue, money you received during the year, you sold stocks, all of those type of issues. During a year, I'm going to use a year. I personally compute my ma'aser, my tzedakah, based on the fiscal year. I find it to be the easiest because you're computing your taxes anyway. And what we're seeing now is a lot of similarities between computations of taxes and computations of tzedakah. So that's the easiest for me, is to compute it. This, I believe, is most people compute it based on the fiscal year, and the differences between taxes and tzedakah you adjust, but they are somewhat minor, as we will see. So when it comes to deductions, we're going to focus on three areas of deductions. Number one, biggest deductions in business thing.
Charity
we'll have to talk about.
Expenses.
We'll talk about that also. So, but broader than that, cost of goods sold is business business deductions. Expenses in business will be one. So one of them is going to be cost of goods sold. How about personal expenses? We'll talk about business expenses. How about personal expenses? I take home money. I use it. Am I paying my ma'aser pre-personal needs or post-personal needs? Taxes, how do we compute taxes? Do I deduct personal needs? No. How about business needs? Business expenses, I deduct. How about personal needs? Well, I don't. So we're going to have to talk second category after we talk business expenses, and can we deduct it for tzedakah purposes, is how about personal expenses? And the third very common area of expenses in the United States, we call him Uncle Sam. I don't know why we call him Uncle Sam, because you're supposed to get along with your relatives, but as if the IRS is somebody friendly to you, but Uncle Sam. Israel, maybe they call him Uncle Chaim. I don't know if they're in England and South Africa, there are phrases. But another big expense is taxes. So are we computing our tzedakah, maser or homesh, pre-tax or post-tax? So those are our three areas that we are going to investigate. Okay, number one, when it comes to business expenses in the same business, the Chavos Yair, who lived in the 1600s in Germany, was asked, can we, for purposes of computing our Meiser HaChomesh, deduct business expenses. And the example that was posed to him was commuting. For example, if somebody goes on a business trip, pays for that ticket, that airline ticket, pays for the hotel, food, whatever it may be, all those expenses for purposes of Meiser, is that all deductible off of gross revenue? So initially, he says he doesn't think so. Why? Because the parallel to taking Meiser from the field. When a field grows produce, we don't say, what were my expenses in growing it? Everything that comes from the field, we give Meiser from it. We give Truma Meiser from whatever comes out of the field. So he says the same thing should be for tzedakah. But then he says, maybe that's different. Whatever comes out of the ground is a chiddush. That's a real chiddush. It's something new that comes out of the ground. That's like you plant a seed and something comes out of the ground. Of course, you're going to give Meiser based on 100% of what. We're not going to deduct expenses. But something that you've invested expenses in business, that he thinks would be deductible. And especially, a major distinction is something that comes out of the ground. Meiser is a d'oraisa. Tithing it is a d'oraisa. But tzedakah, financial tithe, we said last week, there's a minority view that it's d'oraisa. But there are two majority views. Majority view is either it's rabbinic or in nature, or it's a custom in nature to give 10% or 20%. So based on that, he says, surely we can be lenient. We surely can be lenient on that. Now, that's in that Chavos Yair, that was actually the opinion of the person writing the question, posing to the question to the Chavos Yair, Rav David Oppenheim. And he asked the Chavos Yair, that's my opinion, that you can deduct business expenses, not a problem. What do you think? And the Chavos Yair says as follows, Tama ani eich ya'ale ze'al das, shelo yinak ha'otzoa. How can anyone think that you don't deduct your business expenses? How would that even be possible, that you don't deduct it? Why? Because he gives a number of other examples, and we'll put it in contemporary terms. If you're bringing electronics from China, or you're bringing a srogim from Eretz Yisrael, so you have your cost of goods sold, right? You're buying, let's say, an esrog. You got a beautiful esrog coming from Eretz Yisrael. You're going to sell it for $100, but you have to buy it for $50. That's your cost of goods sold. But in addition to that, what are some of the other expenses I have?
Transportation,
the shipping, sales commissions on the yeshiva guys that have to tie up all the lovim and everything like that. I have all these other customs bringing it in. I have a lot of other costs.
Labor
costs. So there are a lot of other costs. He said, of course, the cost of goods sold, the $50 cost of that esrog, I can deduct. But let's say I cannot deduct all those other expenses. Let's say they add up to $45, those other expenses. If I have to pay my tzedakah on my $100 that I sold that esrog for, less my cost of goods, less $50, my gross margin is what? My gross is $50. If I pay Meiser 10% on that, what is it? $5 for tzedakah. What if I have another $45 of expenses? $50 of my product cost for the esrog plus $45, my net is how much? $5. And then I give tzedakah $5, I'm left with nothing. So he says, that's not going to work. Oftentimes, if you're telling us you have to take it off the gross, the person who's trying to earn a livelihood is going to be left with nothing. So he says, you would deduct all the expenses, not only your product cost, but also all the other associated expenses, the $45, and you would pay your tzedakah on what amount? Your meiser on what amount?
On the
net, which is the $5. So I'd be giving 50 cents to tzedakah on my net, not on the $5. 50 cents, not $5. And he explains it beautifully and conceptually as follows. The concept of tzedakah is that we are partners with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Anim in our business. And when it comes to partnership law, leave aside tzedakah law, when it comes to partnership law in Halacha, if you have a partner, the partners can deduct all of their expenses relating to the partnership. All of their expenses, unless they were negligent and something was stolen because of their negligence and something like that. But leaving that aside, this is a partnership. Just like in the Halachas of Shutfus, of partnership, partners can deduct their expenses. So to here, we are partners in our business with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, with the Anim. They're a limited partner. They're getting 10%, 20%. We can deduct all of our expenses. Now, there's a tshuva of the Yaivitz, Rav Yaakov Emdin, who lived in the 1700s in Germany, and he quotes his Chavos Yair, who says you can deduct all business expenses, and he disagrees. And he says, V'chol mashe v'yado harefu bichlal bracha. Everything that you get is a bracha from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. in business, you could just as easily lose as well as gain. It could go either way. So any earnings, any revenue is a bracha. So he's of the view that nothing can be deducted. You can invest, have expenses, and nothing comes of it. So any revenues is a bracha from a Kaddish Baruch. He says it's just like the meiser then of the field. We tithe our fields from everything that comes forth. He says the same thing with business revenues. The bottom line on this in deducting related expenses in business, the Aruch HaShulchan, who was a contemporary of the Mishnah Berurah, Paskins as follows. In Yeradeya Siman Resh Mem Tes, Kol Ha'otzah Sha'aya Lo Al Ha'esek. All of your expenses that you had in a given business, Ahmash and Nasahu Baderech, including all of your traveling expenses, Va'acha V'shasa, and all of your food and drink, Hakol Nechshav Al Ha'otzah Sa'esek U'menake Hakol. You can deduct all of those related business expenses, and you only pay tzedakah on your net. Okay, so the next question then that the Chavos Yair asks is, if this is so, that we can deduct business expenses, what if I have extravagant business expenses? First class business ticket, right? Not first class, not even business, first class ticket, 5-star hotel, living the life, living the dream. So he says as follows. As I mentioned before, the Chavos Yair says that the concept is just like being in a partnership with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Anim. He was asked the following questions by a partner in a business, not in the halachas tzedakah, but in the halachas of shutvus partners. One of the partners had bought some clothing and expensed it to the partnership. And the other partner said, that's not a partnership expense. Clothing is something you need to wear anyway. He needed the clothing to go on a sales trip, to go to some demonstration, whatever it is, some exhibition, and he expensed the clothing. So the Chavos Yair was asked, is that a proper expense for a partner to expense? And the Chavos Yair paskens as follows, the humalbush beinoni, if it's a normal, average, reasonable piece of clothing, she'ein bo kaftorei kesef, that doesn't have buttons made of silver, doesn't have gold or silver, it's not extravagant, it's not an Armani we would put into modern terms, it's a Calvin Klein, it's something reasonable, it's not the top of the line, the Chavos Yair says that the partner can deduct that as a reasonable partnership expense. So based on that, we would say the same thing. You want to ask about if it's Neiman Marcus or something?
I just want to say,
Walmart's okay.
Seems like you should be able to deduct for even extravagant business expenses, because you're basically just shooting yourself in the foot. Like, you're not going to, because you're netting less by paying those extravagant things. So you're not going to do that just to get out of paying more meiser when you're netting.
Right, but people's personalities, some people's personalities are, let me buy showy things. And our question is, you can, people can do that, but should we disadvantage the anim, who is our partner in this, because somebody has the propensity to overspend? So the Minchas Yitzchak put this into more contemporary terms, just to explain it a little better. He says, he brings his Chavos Yair, and he was asked the following question, Liknos mechonas loxus. In Israel, loxus means luxury. It doesn't mean Lexus, but it's kind of the same concept. And we'll use it as a Lexus. If somebody is buying a car for the business, leasing a car, and there it was buying, getting a more expensive machine, why shall yadeze yikne lo shem? It's going to be giving him a bitter name, a better reputation. People think he's successful in business, so they'll be more prone to doing business with him. So that's an exact parallel to what you see nowadays. Somebody, instead of getting a Corolla for the business, is going to get a Lexus, so he looks more successful, and people are going to do more business with him. So the Minchas Yitzchak says, for purposes of Meiser, can you deduct the whole amount? Certainly, if you want to get the Lexus, I can get the Lexus. Okay. That's a different issue. We're not going to deal with it. But for purposes of Meiser, can you deduct the whole amount, or do we have to adjust it to be reasonable? He says, look at the Chavos Yair. He says, if the buttons are silver, that's not reasonable. If it's a regular piece of clothing, that's okay. We would have to adjust it, the expenses, the business expenses, to make sure that they are reasonable. Okay, so where are we so far? If you have expenses in a business, they're deductible, they should be reasonable. If they're not reasonable, we would have to adjust them for purposes of computing our ma'aser or chomesh. Next question that we have to deal with is, what if you have two unrelated businesses? It's not of the same business, but you have one business in, for example, a winery, and you have a car dealership or something like that, and the winery had a terrible year, a lot of competition, couldn't sell through, wine went bad, but the dealership just had a great year. Can I deduct the gains and the losses versus each other? I have losses in the winery, gains in the dealership, or are those separate businesses? And I have to pay the Meister on the dealership, but in the winery, I'm just not going to pay Meister. I have losses there, but I cannot deduct netting out gains versus losses. So the Chavos Yair was asked this question. The Chavos Yair continues, and he says, you can deduct them against each other. But his problem then, he says, I have two problems with this, in fact. Does that mean that somebody gave Meister? He paid Meister on the dealership, and then you see you have a loss in a second business, so you're going to try and go reclaim the amounts that you gave for tzedakah, saying, give me the money back, because in fact I had losses that I'm deducting out. Question number one. Question number two is, obviously that's not going to work. What time period can I deduct gains versus losses? We mentioned this a little bit before. Now we're seeing the relevance of using a time period. What's the time period? So he says, you can net them out as long as you are in the same time period, meaning gains and losses over, and he says 3 months, 6 months. He doesn't say a year, but we use a year or whatever it is. My daughter, as I said, uses a month. So she's actually stricter, because if she would have a gain and ever forbid a loss in a subsequent month, she can't go back to the prior month because she's using a month-by-month basis. The longer period you use, the more of an ability to net gains versus losses. So he says, as long as you use a time period, even if the businesses are not related, you can deduct gains versus losses. The Noah de Yehuda was asked the same question, and he says, Pashut shemisara svara ein shituv laharevach imahef said, he says, obviously you cannot deduct. For example, if you have two fields, one has a good year, one has a bad year, how can you deduct one versus the other? But then he says, you know what? If it's in the same period, he agrees with the Chavos Yair, if you're in the same time period, then even though those businesses are not related, you can deduct one versus the other. We do see that when you own two stocks. We could say those are two separate investments. You had an Apple computer that did great, and you had, give me the stock, that didn't do so well. Not many right now that haven't been doing so well over the past few years. And you sell them both. Can you deduct the gains versus the loss? We're saying now you can, as long as they are in the same time period. There is a dissenting view that you cannot, but we paskin, the Aruch HaShulchan tells us, the im b'shana zo hayolo asakim shiyesha yerviach bem, if you have in a given year businesses that made money and businesses that lost, you do a general computation, similar to taxes. Similar to taxes, it all rolls up to the individual. You had a gain in one business, a loss in another business. It all rolls up to the individual, and we can typically, there are obviously exceptions to this. Is it long-term gain, short-term gain? But we'll leave that all aside. We netted out gains versus losses over our time period, a month, 3 months, 6 months, a year, and we pay the maaser or the chomesh based on the net income from there. Johnny.
Can you also deduct things which aren't related to business, like, let's say your house flooded and you lost lots of money?
We'll see that on this Meister form, so hold the question. Very good question. Yes?
When you sell a business, if the business you invested with, you sold it at a loss, you lost money. Take any Meister on that when you sell?
You don't have, if it's at a loss, you look at your basis, it's similar to tax. You wouldn't say Meister. So you paid Meister on the initial investment of $500,000, or you took a loan on it and you have to pay it back. It's only on your appreciation, just like a stock. If it appreciates, you sell it at a gain, you have Meister. If you sell it at a loss, you don't pay Meister. And if you have that loss and you have a gain somewhere else, you would net the two. Okay. Interesting question here. But by the way, the Igros Moshe says you can net out losses and gains in different businesses. There is a hiddur mitzvah to not do that. If it's the same business, yes, hiddur mitzvah to not do it. But miikra din, you can't. Okay, I just want to pull forward. I'll take afterward if there. Interesting question now. Husband is at work. This is a very common shaila. Not earning enough, so the decision is made that the wife should go out to work also. There are 3, 4, 10 kids that have to be taken care of. So what do you have to do? You have to hire some domestic help to assist with the kids, a nanny. So the question is, for purposes of Meiser, Is that also going to be a business expense, or is that going to be a personal expense? Now, let's assume right now that personal expenses I cannot deduct. Business expenses we know you can deduct. So is that a business expense, the amounts paid to the nanny, or is that a personal expense that I cannot deduct? So when it comes to the tax area, there was a tax case in the United States in 1939. It was decided in 1939. There were some taxpayers, the Smith family, and she had to go out to work. So they decided we're going to deduct the amounts of the nanny that we need, and we're going to deduct those amounts on a tax return as business expenses. So the IRS challenged that. They submitted their tax return to IRS and said, you can't deduct that. That's a personal expense. That's not a business expense. They litigated. The Smiths were trying to make a point here, obviously. They litigated, and they went up to the appeals court, U.S. Board of Tax Appeals, and the tax court found in favor of the IRS. And they wrote an opinion as follows. The IRS determined a deficiency of $23.62 in the Smiths' 1937 income tax. That was how many dollars? Less than $400 in today's dollars. It's not a lot of money. Obviously, the Smiths were trying to make a point here. So the IRS said, there's a deficiency. You didn't pay. You deducted inappropriately. You owe that tax, fines, fees, etc. This was due to the disallowance of a deduction claim by the Smiths, who are husband and wife, for sums spent by the wife in employing nursemaids to care for their young children. So what was the argument of the Smiths that they made that this is a deductible business expense? They said as follows. We are going to apply the but-for test. But-for, if it were not for our hiring the nanny, the wife would not be able to go out to work. But for this, but for this expense, we would not be able to work. They proposed that but for the nurses, the wife could not leave her children. But for the freedom so secured, she could not pursue her gainful labors. But for her going out to work, there would be no income and no tax. Good argument. The tax, the court responds as follows. So if you want to use that test, the but for test, how about the fee to the doctor? You pay the doctor because you need to be healthy. Is that a personal expense or is that a business expense? How about the cost of your clothing? I can't go to work if I don't have clothing on, but is that a personal expense or a business expense? How about the cost of your house? If I don't have a place to live, I can't go to work. Is that a business expense or is that a personal expense? Yet these are the very essence of those personal expenses, the deductibility of which is expressly denied. We are not endorsing the but-for test. So they say you cannot deduct the nanny's cost for purposes of paying your taxes, deducting your taxes. The Sefer Tzedakah Mishpah, when it comes to computing tzedakah, says otherwise. Mistaver, it makes sense. Shecholim lenakos ha'machnasa, you can deduct off of your revenue what you have to pay to domestic help, and a nurse in the house, a ozeret, a housekeeper. And what's the test? He says, im lulei ha'ozeres, if it were not for that help, but for that help, lohaisa yechola latzeis lavod, the wife would not be able to go out to work. So we see, and this is an important point, we have a distinction here between the tax computation and the miser computation. So if you do it at the same time, you're computing your taxes, compute your miser, there are certain adjustments, and here we see that the tzedakah is more lenient than the for tax purposes. If it's a quick question, otherwise I... No. Okay, next part. We've gone through business deductions. Now we are going to... we're going to cover personal deductions, personal expenses. Should we be able to deduct them? So the Orach HaShulchan says, Hotzos beiso lo yinake. You cannot deduct personal expenses. And he brings the following example. Somebody earns $1,000, we'll say. So the maaser, 10% would be 100. Chomesh would be 200. What happens if he spends more than the 1,000 that he earned? Baruch HaShulchan says you got to pay. The fact that you paid more, you expensed more in your household than you earned, you still have an obligation to pay the maaser or chomesh because personal expenses are not deductible. The Tzitz Eliezer was asked the same question, and the questioner asked two questions, in fact. He said, number one, the Baruch HaShulchan says you cannot deduct personal expenses, but the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says you can. So it's a machlokes. Question number one. Question number two, on the side that you can deduct personal expenses, can I be lavish in how I live? What happens as a personal expense? I've got that Lexus. I've got the Cadillac. I buy expensive clothing. I got a real big house. Or do I have to adjust all of those expenses to be more reasonable? So the Tzitz Eliezer says on that first question, are personal expenses deductible or not? He says that this is a machlokas, and he finds a tshuva of the Afkas Rochel. The Afkas Rochel was written by Rav Yosef Cairo, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch. So he wrote some tshuvas also. He wrote two sets of tshuvas. Now, it happens to be debatable whether he actually wrote this specific tshuva or not, but regardless, there are some achronim that quote this tshuva, the Afkas Rochel, like the Knesset Sagdola quotes it, saying you can deduct personal expenses also, not only business expenses. And the Tzitz Eliezer says, so some say you can, or Aruch HaShulchan says you can't, and others say you cannot. And then he quotes the Maran Broda that discusses both of our questions. Are personal expenses deductible? And if so, can I live lavishly? He says as follows. Chiyuv ha-maser eino mutal ele b'mashen ishtaya reva achar kol ha-tzolosav. You can deduct everything. You pay net, even net of your personal expenses. You also do not have to live stingily. You don't have to adjust your tzedakah because you spent lavishly. You can spend as you desire without any limitation. So that is the view of the Tzitz Eliezer. If somebody has not historically not deducted personal expenses, meaning it's historically you weren't lenient. Historically you didn't give, for example, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, somebody who's never given Meister, how should they start, and do they have to give back taxes? But if somebody has been strict all along and not deducted personal expenses, you can't start deducting personal expenses now that you learn that there are some shitas that say you can deduct personal expenses. I only found that out after I was only deducting business expenses. You can't change it. Maybe you can be Mati or Neder or something like that. But he says somebody who has not been strict historically can deduct personal expenses and can live lavishly. I will say, and this is an important point, we do not paskin that way. Doruch HaShulchan paskins that, as we mentioned, personal expenses are not deductible. And the Sefer Tzedakah Mishpat says as follows, Hotzos mezonosav mezonos b'nei beiso, expenses for your kids, for your household, eino menake mischum harevet. You do not deduct from your revenue. So far, we have gone through business expenses. We've said business expenses are deductible. We've gone through personal expenses. We've said, although a machlokes, we paskin, personal expenses are not deductible. In case I mention it, forget to mention it later, if somebody is not able to pay maser or chomesh unless they compute it with their deducting the personal expenses, then we're lenient. In that case, we're lenient that you can deduct personal expenses also. Other than that situation, we would not deduct personal expenses. Our last of the 30 areas that we're going to discuss is taxes. Are we paying chomesh and maaser pre-tax or post-tax? So Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked this question, and he says that not all taxes are treated equally when it comes to computation of maaser and chomesh. He says when it comes to income taxes, we pay our maaser and chomesh post-tax, not pre-tax. Why? What's the rationale? He says it's as if you never earn the money. That goes to the government. I remember many, many years ago, I was reading the Wall Street Journal once, and it was towards the end of May, and it had this little blurb in it that said, today is tax freedom day. So I said, what does that mean, tax freedom day? Tax freedom day. He says, today is the day that until now, through this year, you've been working for the government, paying your taxes, and now you're starting to work for yourself. Think about it. If the tax rate is 40%, 40% of the year, you're working for the government. The rest of the year, you are working for yourself. You never earn that money. The other way to think about it, if somebody works from 9 to 5, 8 hours, and if you're in a 50% bracket or something like that, you're working from the government from 9 to 1, and 1 till 5 p.m., you are working for yourself. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says that because you have effectively never earned the taxes that go to income tax and FICA and all those other things that they take off the top. It's very surprising when you get a paycheck. You thought it was X and it's X minus, it's almost down to zero. You never earn that other stuff. You never came in, and even if you received it and then you pay the taxes, but it's like the government has that portion of it, you never earned it. But he says, in contrast, VAT tax, that's value-added tax, that's what's called the European way, right? In the United States, we call it sales tax. Israel, it's the it's VAT tax. And if you pay a tax on a residential purchase of real estate, for example, none of that, according to Rav Moshe, is deductible for purpose of Maaser. That was volitional things that you've done, sales tax, VAT. But if it's business expenses, business taxes, for example, you buy a piece of real estate for an investment, that is all deductible for purposes of Maaser because it's a business expense. Now, the Minchas Yitzchak says, if you want to be machmir like Rav Moshe, that is fine. That's great. Tavo la bracha. But if you really need to deduct all taxes, it would be appropriate to deduct all taxes for purposes of Maaser if that's going to enable you to give Maaser. Now, if you've done it the stricter way, you shouldn't change. But if you're just starting, the Minchas Yitzchak says, then you could be lenient. Okay, we've gone through now all three areas of deductions. We've said when it comes to business expenses, deductible or not deductible? Deductible. Personal expenses? Not deductible. Taxes, Rav Moshe says, income taxes, that's the biggie, deductible, FICA, etc., employment taxes, deductible, others not. Minchas Yitzchak says, if you have no choice in the matter, you need to deduct to compute your Maaser, you can be lenient also. What happens if someone comes to a shir and they've worked in the workplace and didn't know about this concept of Maaser and Chomesh and the computation and didn't give historically? Do they have to give back Maaser, like back taxes? Do you have to pay tzedakah on everything that you have earned historically? Now, when it comes to taxes, as we know, somebody who didn't pay taxes, the IRS, SARS in South Africa, what's it in Great Britain, what's it in England? Whatever it's called in England, Germany, the Internal Revenue, they can come knock on your door and say, you didn't disclose income, we computed differently from you, you have to pay back taxes. How about for purposes of tzedakah? So Rav Ozner, the Shevet HaLevi, was asked this question. And he says, somebody who accepted upon himself to give Maaser and Chomesh and didn't, they would have to compute based on from when they made a commitment to give, they have to compute it and give it, even if they didn't pay. But somebody who never accepted it upon themselves, never made that commitment and didn't pay, they would not be obligated to pay for the past. Why? We can be lenient because there are many opinions that say that computations of Chomesh, giving of Chomesh and Maaser, 10%, 20% is either Durban or even more so a Minhag. And if it's a Minhag, unless you make a commitment to give, you're not obligated to give. So he brings that very strong Svara, why one would not have to give. There are three others. The Tshuva Svan Agus was asked an unbelievable question. A Baal Tshuva in his 70s wrote to Rav Sternbach and said, I am concerned, I have not historically given Maaser, I'm running a computation, it looks like I would have had to pay $200,000 in Maaser on what I earned historically and did not pay. I am concerned, I'm getting late in my life. I am concerned that I have stolen that money from the poor. And come Yom HaDin, I am worried that I will have a major mark against me for not having paid that tzedakah. And the bigger problem, he said, is I only have $30,000 in my bank account. If you tell me, the Baal Tshuva says to Rav Sternbach, that I need to pay the 200 grand, I'm happy to give. I'm willing to give the $30,000 that I have that will wipe me out. I'm okay with that. I'm happy to do it, but I don't have $200,000. An amazing question. So Rav Sternbach says, Ashrecha Yisrael, what an amazing shaila. What an amazing person to be so concerned about this. He says as follows, for three additional reasons, you would not be obligated to give that $200,000. So his svara number two, Shevet HaLevi was that it based it on it's being a minhag, you don't have to give for the past. Rav Sternbach adds another svara as follows. If you look at the parallel to tithing the fields, to give Maaser from a field, you only have to give it if you have the fruit, the produce in front of you. Once you've eaten it, you blew it. You can't do it anymore. So the same thing when it comes to the money, has to be in advance. After the fact, there would not be an obligation or an opportunity to give the Maaser. So that's our second svara, why somebody would not have to pay for the past. Number three, we said that there's a pasuk and a drasha that says aser taaser, somebody who gives tithes, aser bishvil shititasher, it's a bracha. Somebody who gives maaser, it's a bracha to become wealthy. Somebody who wasn't in the parsha of giving, who didn't have in mind to give when he was earning the money, he didn't have that bracha, and he didn't have a limited partner of the anim to make a commitment to give. So because he didn't have it in mind to give at the time, he didn't have the bracha at the time, he would not have to give for the past. However, Rav Sturmbach says, the $30,000 that you have in the bank, you should give 10% of that, which is how much? $3,000. That you should give, so you have the bracha on that money. So that's another rationale. That's our third rationale. He brings a fourth rationale based on a Gemara Baba Kama, Takana Sashavim. If we tell people that you to start doing the, to be a Baal Tshuva and to start doing the mitzvah Maaser Ksafim, to give tzedakah, you have to pay everything from the past, that is going to be potentially a non-starter for some people. So we have to be lax and say, on a going forward basis, give, but don't give for the past. Okay, I quickly want to give out the Maaser computation form and go through this. We're going to have some important last points to go through. Just 3 points before we go through this. When it comes to what should be given, we're not going to go in detail. We only have a few more minutes as to what are the proper uses of Maaser and Chomesh. But when it comes to giving people in the household, the family, we mentioned last time, you come first. That's important. After taking care of yourself, somebody's parents who are needy, they come after yourself, and then one's children. So first you come, parents, your children, and then it expands from there. That's another important point. Another important concept is Aniya Ircha Kodem. The poskim say that people of your city come first rather than people in a faraway city. So somebody comes and knocks on your door and you're living in Chicago and they're from Los Angeles and say, I'm raising. There are many needs in Chicago that comes before a different city. Now this is a very important point. I've heard a number of poskim say that this concept of Aniya Ircha does not mean strictly the people, the needy, the organizations in your city come first. It means the organizations that you have a relevance to. It doesn't mean that if there's a Bell's or Visionist institution next door to you, that they come and say, I'm the closest to you, I'm the Aniya Ircha, so you have to give me first. Institutions, even if they're out of town, that you have a connection to, you learned in Or Sameach, you learned in the Mir, and even if they're out of town, they're an institution that you have a relationship with, they would come first before the institutions, even if they are closer to you. Another very important point before we get to the master form is I recommend highly having a separate account for your tzedakah. As you earn the money, put it into the tzedakah account. It makes it much easier to give funds from a charity account because it's no longer your money than giving from your bank account. If somebody comes and asks, and it's coming for your bank account, you're looking at it as if you were giving your money. If you already put it in a tzedakah, designated for tzedakah charity account, it is the easiest thing to write a check. I always say it's easy to spend somebody else's money than yours. So, unfortunately, write it out of the tzedakah account. Let me just get through the Maaser form. If you look at the form, we're quickly going to go through. I'm not going to go through the details. There's a book that comes along with this Maaser form. It's not available, unfortunately, anymore. It was published in 1984, I think, or something like that, the Maaser form. So there's a lot of detail that goes along with this. But on a high level, this looks like a form 1040. Nice, yeah? Form 1040, Maaser form, income on the top page, and it goes through 28. I just want to look at number 28. Other income subject to Maaser. If you think you have something that wasn't listed on 1 through 27 as a revenue, it's all included. Then we have adjustments. On the second page, there are some adjustments that are accepted, fully lahalacha, and then right underneath there are other possible adjustments that is subject to machlokas. If you need to adjust, but if you don't need to, one shouldn't. And then the top, adjustments to income, federal and state, local income taxes, FICA, self-employment taxes, business expenses, and look through the long list of business expenses, rent, automobile, telephone, etc. other possible adjustments. Somebody mentioned before, if you had a non-reimbursed casualty, somebody asked that, that's in the top, adjustments to income. And then once we achieve, we have all the revenue, we have all the deductions we take, we have our net income, then we apply either 10% or ideally 20%, ideally chomesh, in order to see what our maaser, our chomesh, our tzedakah obligation is. And part three underneath that is where should it be given? Poor people, to enable one to study Torah, hachnasas kala, etc., etc. So these are all important. If somebody is not able to give the full amount, we see here that we have some leniencies in giving. And also where you can give, if somebody is not able to really afford it, there may be some leniencies into applying it, for example, to tuitions for your own kids. That's not a lechatchila, but if it's necessary, there are heterim for that. Just want to end quickly, because we're out of time, on one beautiful story. Maybe I'll say tell a couple. The story was told of Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Slobodka, who was visiting the United States in 1924 to raise funds for the Slobodka Yeshiva. While he was in the United States, he received an urgent telegram from the altar of Slobodka that the Lithuanian authorities had decided to draft all of the boys in the Slobodka Yeshiva into the ruthless Lithuanian army, which meant potential death to the boys, but certainly spiritual death. Shabbos could not keep kashrus forget. So the altar of Slobodka wire, and this wire says, quickly raise $25,000 so we can move all of the boys to Eretz Yisrael and get them out of here. That's $25,000 in 1924 dollars. So Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein turns to one of the major benefactors of the yeshiva, Mr. Schiff, and says, I have an urgent need, can you help out the yeshiva? Mr. Schiff decided to take the entire amount upon himself, wrote a check in 1924 for $25,000 to move the Slobodka Yeshiva from Lithuania to Eretz Yisrael. Fast forward 1929, what hits in the United States and the world? The Terrible Depression. They call it the Great Depression. The Terrible Depression. Mr. Schiff is heavy in real estate and stocks and loses everything, to the effect that he had to move into the basement of a building that he formerly owned. He's renting a basement of a building that he owns. Come the 1930s, Rav Epstein was no longer able to make the trip to the United States, and he sent Rav Cheskel Sarna, his son-in-law, to go raise funds for the yeshiva. There's a parlor meeting, and Mr. Schiff, who is destitute, gets up at the parlor meeting, and he says as follows, I don't wish my business woes on anyone. I invested millions and lost everything. I have lost every investment that I have ever made. There is only one investment that I still have, and that's the $25,000 that I gave 10 years ago to the Slobodka Yeshiva. $25,000 at that time was close to $400,000 in today's dollars. And he told the assembled parlor meeting that the only money that one has that is guaranteed is the money that one gives to charity. And that's an important thing to remember when we're giving tzedakah. This is not money that we are giving away, because that is the only asset that we will ever be able to take with us. Guys, have a great week. Amir Tashem, we'll start a new topic next week.